and I cook all day as my job, so I actually try and keep things really simple when I host a dinner party. I'll eat plain pasta with butter. Like, you really don't have to do anything. All of my napkins that I have are my grandma's old napkins, probably the 40s or 50s, and I've got this huge stack of them. Great to have a microphone. It just feels powerful. We're leveling up from Prosecco. We're not in our early 20s anymore, but we still can't afford champagne. I'm not really a baker. I don't really care about sweet treats and puddings, but I know that a lot of people like to end the meal on sweet treats.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Tables to Talk About. Today, I'm chatting to Saskia Saidi, a London-based food stylist, recipe developer, food writer, and co-founder of Saidi Studio, a brand new gorgeous food photography studio in Peckham, which she's just set up with her wife Jo, who I've actually previously worked with on some photography for Studio Dime. If you're in need of a space for a shoot, make sure you go and check it out, and then let's get into today's episode. Hello.
Hello. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. You look like you're in the new studio.
I am. I'm up in the little co-working space. It would be less echoey if I was closer to the roof, so apologies for the dirty old roof.
You wanna do a little quick intro for anyone who might not follow you already?
I'm Saskia Saidi. I am a food stylist, recipe developer, and food writer. So I do a lot of ghostwriting, things like that. I develop recipes and share them online. Anything to do with food, I do it. Oh, and I now have a food photography studio with my wife, Jo.
Yeah, brand new studio. I feel like you need to talk about it more and tell everyone
Welcome.
all about it.
So yeah, we just started this all-in food studio because we are a wife and wife team who do a lot of food photography and food styling, and we just really wanted to take that out of our house and get our house back a bit. So we used to have props everywhere and photo equipment and just endless boxes. So now we finally have our own space in Peckham, which we're renting out and using ourselves, and it's perfect. We're obsessed with it.
It's amazing. It's massive and has massive windows with big natural.
Huge windows. I got all of this space to film content in. I'm so excited. It's going to be really good.
So, anyone looking for a studio?
Yeah, if anyone needs it, check us out. Sidey Studio plug.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm excited to chat to you about your dream dinner party. I feel like whenever I have anyone on that's that works directly in food, it's always an interesting one.
Even more pressure to deliver.
Yeah. Are you going to be the host of your dinner party?
I am always the host of a dinner party, yes. I absolutely love hosting. I'm just obsessed with people being in my house, and I just want more people there all the time. Hate any time by myself, so more time hosting, the better.
Are you an extrovert then?
I think so, probably. I've never done one of those tests, but I definitely don't like time alone, so I feel like that's not introvert.
I think you're probably an extrovert. No, so do you guys have people round a lot for dinner and stuff?
We do quite a lot for dinner, but I'd say since having a kid, we do a lot more breakfast, lunch, and kiddie tea. You know, the sort of extra meal day parts.
Yeah,
we'll often have a bunch of other parent friends around with their kids, and we're up from really early, so we can start things off.
Yeah,
breakfast quite easily. I'll make pancakes for everybody, and that'll be from 9 o'clock. Then we'll, go to the park, come back, all have lunch together in the garden. The parents start drinking some wine and cocktails, and then everyone's eating a spag bol by the evening time. So
nice. Okay, so you're hosting your dream dinner party.
Yes.
Set the scene for us. Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at home. We moved into our house almost 4 years ago now, so it still feels new and exciting, and I want to show it off. So it's going to be in our kitchen dining room, around our big table. I like to keep things really informal for a dinner party, so I'm never going to play anything up for anyone. It's always going to be family style. I'm hardly ever going to do a starter or even really a pudding. I think it's the longer that you spend nibbling over a good little bowl of crisps or something and having a chat and having a drink, and then you have that really long meal. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep on getting up, going back to the kitchen, cooking something else. And I cook all day as my job, so I actually try and keep things really simple when I host a dinner party.
Yeah, I feel like there's that expectation, isn't there, when you do something for work, for you to be that person in your private life as well.
Yeah.
For me, also, people are like, well, don't you like...
No escape.
Don't you make it look incredible? And I'm like, sometimes if I've got... I'm feeling in the mood, but like a lot of the time it's just, it's way more informal, not worried too much about what it looks like, but just about like gathering everyone around a table. Are you going to do with the table, if anything?
I'm actually not usually on decorating duty. That falls to my wife, Jo. She is a lot more detailed, well, maybe we'll call it pedantic, but in a nice way. She likes to, you know, lay everything just so. We have some beautiful, like, I think it's quite common now, but those sort of speckled hot pottery, like Poulian style.
Oh, yeah. Yep, nice.
And we have those in starter size and large, so it'll be really colourful. We've got them in yellow and purple and green. And then all of my napkins that I have are my grandma's old napkins. So they've been, you know, probably the 40s or 50s, and I've got this huge sack of them. So yeah, we mix it up because they're all sorts of different patterns. They're quite like a mismatched vibe. But Jo is usually doing the laying because she's got to do something if I'm...
Yeah, fair enough. You've got to spread the work. Are you having flowers, anything?
Cute little posies of flowers throughout the table.
Cute, nice. So do you have like specific things that you'll like pull out or...
Not really. Again, it's just quite laid back and informal like that. We try not to have things in the house that we don't think are beautiful and bring us joy. So I'm happy really for... It's not like we have the fancy plates for when people come over and different plates for us when we're at home. So yeah, we're just using what we've got.
Because you are using your space at home for like day-to-day like recipe developing and stuff, you've probably got like loads of bits and pieces that you don't even realize that you have that you use day-to-day for like that kind of stuff.
I've got our cupboard where we keep our plates and bowls that we use every day, and I've got another huge cupboard just full of small plates, bowls, serving platters, you know, different jugs and stuff. So I have accumulated so much stuff, so many props, that I can never struggle to find the perfect size dish for something.
You're like, I know we've got somewhere.
You know, with a hole in the middle or whatever it needs.
Nice. So who are you inviting?
Alive, I'm going Nigella because I just have to meet her. Been obsessed with her since I was a little kid. Would just die in her presence.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be too intimidating for her to eat my food. Probably not. I think she'd be really kind.
Yeah, I did an event with her in Ocado actually last year, and we didn't speak, I saw her with my eyes.
You felt her presence. I've seen her with my eyes in a restaurant before. I was really enjoying my meal, and I was like, it was so worth it that we came.
So good.
So good.
You're like, food shit. Nigella's here though, so it's fine. Okay. Yeah, she'd be amazing at any dinner party, I think.
Dead, I'm probably going to be really soppy, but say my dad, who passed away almost 10 years ago, because he was the best dinner party guest, would always be crying with laughter, drinking everyone else under the table, and really, really good chat. So he would
amazing.
Another invite. Nice. And then a lie. Oh, no, I done that. That's my jella. Fictional. I think I would go for Miss Wiz. She was a children's book character. She was this teacher who was sort of magic, and she had this big grey streak of hair. And
I remember this.
I was obsessed with all of those books, so it'd be fun. I should probably get on really well with my dad. So,
all right, nice. An eclectic group.
That's literally, I just feel completely stumped. But I think they'd be a good crowd. They're all kind of similar age. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Do you think Nigella would like try and get involved in the kitchen, or do you think she'd be like quite a...
I think she'd be happy to have the time off. Like, this is what I feel like. I don't feel like I get invited to dinner parties very often, and I think it's because people feel like, oh, she cooks, or it's going to be intimidating, when like they don't appreciate that I just love chicken nuggets, or like I would be...
And you're like, please,
like I'll eat plain pasta with butter. Like, you really don't have to do anything. Just feed me. Just mean that I don't have to do the washing up.
Yeah.
So I think that Nigella would be keen to put her feet up for once. You know, she'd be working hard for
a glass
of
wine. Yeah, I feel like Nigella doesn't get invited over for dinner parties. What do you think makes a good dinner party guest?
I think it's more about the host and who you've invited, and making sure that you know that people are going to have common ground and get along. Like, remembering whether they have met at that party or met at your wedding or something like that, like making sure that you've thought about putting these people in a room together, because often it's not really someone's fault if they're not having a nice time, it's who they've been paired with. But I think a good guest brings something, doesn't have to be food related, doesn't have to be a bottle of wine, but just like a little token, whether that's something you were making, you did today, a little card, some flowers, a little thing of a bag of crisps is just like all you actually need to bring. But
yeah, a bag of crisps is a great dinner party. Like,
Chris, you can make them the fancy ones, black truffle number, then you're going to go down a treat.
That's what we had as canapes at our wedding.
Perfect. It's a complete meal.
Yeah, and then everybody just smelt like them, so it's fine.
They do have a particular hum.
I think like all of our like London friends were like, oh yeah, like we know what these are. And then there were definitely some people that were like, what are these?
This tastes weird.
This is a weird flavour. You could it separated the crowds. Is there anything you'd really want to chat to Nigella about?
I think I'd want to just know like how real it all was. Not now, because I think you can tell now that like the production value has increased to such a degree that it is a sort of planned out thing by a production company and with her involved. Whatever, but when she was going down for her like little midnight snack at home, it just felt so real and genuine, and I just want to know like whose idea that was, whether she had just invited the film crew around one night and then, I don't know, I just want to know
how does it work. Yeah, I think the behind the scenes of all that stuff is so interesting, like just to be a fly on the wall in like some of those situations would be very fun. We've set the scene. We've got your guests. What are you going to be listening to?
What are we going to be listening to? I'm quite basic, to be honest. I like just being like, hey, Siri, play dinner party music. But I quite like
one less thing to worry about.
But I'll often put on like a 70s or 60s playlist, because they're often just like a bit more mellow in tone, but still quite fun. I do have a karaoke machine at home, so if the night's gone, well, could end in karaoke.
I think that might be what my life is missing, you know, karaoke machine.
Honestly, it really is. Even if you don't have one, we've done many nights before we got the karaoke machine where you just give everyone a wooden spoon and everyone just shouts at YouTube.
You just put it on the TV. All the
songs. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, we do that, but I think the karaoke machine is like the next step up, isn't it?
Great to have a microphone. It just feels powerful.
But your neighbours don't love it, though.
We did get quite a lot of complaints the last time that we did it. It was New Year's Eve. Let people have a little fun.
You can't have complaints on New Year's Eve.
1:05. She'd obviously waited until 1 in the morning.
Stop.
Like, now it's enough. She's knocking on the door. Anyway.
Oh, like full on came. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. What's your go-to karaoke song?
I like the Four Non-Blondes. What's that? What's going on? Sorry, not what's that. Yeah, it's got a really, everyone really screams it with you.
I think that's the key to a good karaoke song, though. Like, no one wants you to pick, like, a song that they can't also sing along to.
No one wants to hear you sing. They want to sing along with you, I think.
Yeah.
Karaoke is a communal activity. I think it's really sort of showcased as this individual singing. No one cares. It is about screaming together.
Yeah, it's really boring if you're sitting on the sofa like, I don't love this one.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Or if it's really longer than you remembered.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, even if you're like halfway through a song and you're like, oh, I don't want to do this one anymore. We've done the chorus twice, I'm over it. I don't have
to go these middle verses.
Food and drink. What are you going to be serving?
I'm going to start off with nibbly bits. Everyone loves deep fried food and especially deep fried cheese. So I'm probably going to do like some cheesy croquettes or something to start. Maybe with like a spicy little dip. And crisps and olives and whatever else. To be honest, I'm probably clearing out whatever I've been on a shoot with the recipe testing with. It's great to get other people to eat it. Oh, and if I have time, I love doing little quail's eggs. Super retro, but like hard-boiled little quail's eggs, and everyone dips them into the little pot of salt. I think it just feels very chic.
Yeah, and they are more delicious.
It's so much more delicious.
Sam and I always say that we would like to have quails. at some point in our
life. I don't think I could even spot a quail in a lineup.
I feel like it'd be, they're very cute. It's like chickens, but like, I feel like cooler. Yeah. It's like, oh no, we've just got quails.
That is.
But I don't know. I don't have any knowledge about how they grow egg. How they grow eggs? How they
On the inside
in comparison to a chicken?
It's probably still like one a day or something, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna look into it.
Well, if you're gonna get them, you're gonna have to start doing your research.
Yeah. But we're getting them for cuteness as well as quail's eggs.
So would they be cute? I don't know if I've ever found a bird cute up close. A picture of one, sure. Jemima Puddleduck, why not? But a real bird, I think they might just get a bit pecky.
Maybe. I mean, I won't know until I try.
And then you have to get rid of the quails.
Yeah. Anyway, they are quite cute. I mean.
Oh, they've got funny little feet.
They're cuter than chickens.
They are cuter than. No, but, you know, when the chickens have the fluffy legs where they look like
flowers,
those ones are. They're not cute, but they're fun to look at.
I think I keep seeing like Instagram videos of like little kids like really hugging quails, and I think that's where this has come from. You know, when like kids grow up really closely with animals and they just like don't really realize they're not the same.
I think I saw what you're talking about, where the boy's friends with like a crow or something.
Yeah. That's this weird thing I've got. Anyway, side note, we're gonna have some quail's eggs.
Yeah. We're going to have, anything remotely deep fried, but like particularly like a ham and cheese croquette. And we're probably going to mill around with some drinks and those nibbles for a while.
What are you going to serve to drink?
I'm going to go for Cremant. It's my around drink of choice. We're leveling up from Prosecco. We're not in our early 20s anymore, but we still can't afford champagne. Cremant.
Yeah. We're in between.
Cremant. 11 quid a bottle. It's doable. You can buy it, you know. Big old case of it, and everyone feels really fancy. Sometimes I would also make like a little cocktail with those, like maybe with some Saint-Germain, make it elderflowery, or I'll do a Lillet spritz. So Lillet, or it might be like Lillet, I don't know. French vermouth, you can get it in red, rosé, and white.
Okay, yeah.
But it's not as like vermouthy as vermouth. It's quite sweet and tastes really good with lemon. So you just do a lemon wedge, Lillet, and top it up with spritz on ice. Delicious. Or you can also give people the Lillet just on ice on the rocks. It's delicious. And then people are always like, oh, what's that? And then you got a conversation.
Nice. Two in one. Yeah. We've had our nibbles and our
drinkies. And then I'm doing a roast chicken. I'm always doing roast chicken. I'll do it all sorts of different ways depending on the mood. I had some friends round this week and did a whole roast satay chicken, and we had it with lettuce cups and rice and lots of pickles, and I just like it when everyone can sort of dig in and make their own thing. But on my dream dinner party, I am just doing quite a traditional roast chicken, roast potatoes, all of the trimmings kind of situation, because I just think it makes people happy. Like, there's no better smell in the house. Roast chicken, like, there's no better. Not enough meals have gravy. Most meals should have gravy. Potato is the ultimate potato, so it's just the best meal on earth. My death row dinner.
What's your roast chicken process? Because I feel like everyone has a slightly different process.
I salt it as soon as I get it from the supermarket or the butcher. Leave it out in the fridge uncovered. It like helps with it getting a little bit of a crispy skin. And then I sprinkle it with some flaky salt after that. Lots of pepper, thyme and rosemary, and then I shove half a lemon, half a shallot and more herbs in there. It's not the bum, it's the head, isn't it?
The hole. Into the hole it goes. The cavity.
Then I lay it on a bed of hard either onions or shallots, because they get really caramelized and make the gravy taste delicious. But I can't ever be bothered with the carrot and the celery and all the other bit. The shallot is enough. And then I serve those. Oh, and I do a whole bulb of garlic and I squish that into the gravy later. And then I only roast it for like max an hour.
Nice.
I think everyone overcooks their chicken. It keeps cooking when it rests. And if the thighs are a bit pink when you've carved it, you just shove them back in. But
you just got to check those bits.
You just got to check. I leave it to rest for like a full hour while I'm prepping everything.
Yeah, nice.
Just get that in first.
And then you're serving it with roast potatoes, you said?
Roast potatoes. I'm serving it with Yorkshire puddings. Mm-hmm. I'm having probably some sort of like spring green or spinachy green and some roasted carrots. And that's where I'm leaving it. I think that's enough. Yeah.
Okay, nice. And what are we drinking with main?
Oh, I'm a whatever you like. I'm not forcing people, but it's wine. You can't have a beer with a roast. I think that would be white rosé, red. We don't discriminate. But if it's a red, it's a Côte de Rhône. You can't go wrong. But also, it's like it's really cheap and affordable, and it genuinely, like, you'd never get one of those really like vinegary, horrible corner shop bottles. But if you can see a Côte de Rhône in the corner shop, it will be good. If it's white, it's probably going to be like a natural white. We quite like natural whites and oranges. And
do you have a favorite natural wine?
I like them when they're a bit fizzy, so I like the sort of pet nat ones. Yeah,
we went to a to Brighton Natural Wine Fair on Saturday.
Did all of the wines, or did you have to keep them?
It was actually very, very good value for money. So I think we paid like around 20 quid for a ticket.
Yeah,
and you got 5 tokens, which got you to try 5 wines. And it was like, I mean, they weren't the best pours, but it was a good amount of wine. And then you could buy more tokens, and each token cost £1. But each token got you this much of wine. So I think it was pretty good. Yeah.
You're quite
squishy. So then we were like, we'll buy all the tokens and try all the wines. Yeah. And then it descended.
How did you get home from Brighton on the train?
On a very late train.
I went to uni in Brighton, and I once came home like after it must have been a big day out, because obviously the night train is not that late.
Yeah.
And I fell asleep on the train, and then I woke up back in Brighton. So I'd gone to London and back, and then it was the last train. I couldn't go home again.
Disaster.
Total disaster. Yeah.
That's so funny. I love those stories that you see on like Instagram where people have got really drunk and woken up in a different country. And you're like, how did you do it?
Where's your passport? I just don't believe
you're like it. No, like, how can, because like you can black out, but like, how can you black out and be organized enough to like function through airport security?
Probably Long Island iced teas. I feel like that could do it. If you just mix like 6 different alcohols together, something's gonna stick.
Danger. Yeah. But yeah, how funny. I just like, it really cracks me up thinking about somebody waking up in a different country and being like, how did I get here?
And where would you be? And would you be with anyone you knew?
Yeah, I do. So many questions. We're sticking with wine for the main. What are you serving for dessert?
I've got a really good ice cream shop near me. I'm not really a baker. I don't really care about sweet treats and puddings, but I know that a lot of people like to end the meal on a sweet treat. So I will go get a pistachio gelato from Adonos on Lordship Lane. It's like £18 for a tub. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I've never bought a tub from there, but I have bought a scoop.
Scoop, fine, whatever. You're like, oh, everything costs this much, but it really, you really feel it when it comes to that is how much I love my guests.
And it's your dream dinner party, so why not?
Dinner party, and it just, everyone is so happy.
I actually got a milkshake from there not that long ago, which
why would you get a milkshake from an ice cream shop?
Because they put the ice cream in the milkshake, and then it's like very, very delicious.
I just think that's quite a rogue choice. It's like not what it says on the tin. It's like getting an ice lolly from an ice cream shop.
Yeah, no, but it's made from their ice cream.
Well, I'm now probably going to have to go have one to see if you're...
You should definitely try it.
What flavour did you go for?
I think it was a stracciatella one.
I do love that one. As a scoop, so I'm sure I would like.
I'm unsure, but I think that's probably what I would have gone for. Sticking with wine, or are you gonna crack anything else out?
No, I'm sticking with wine. I've learnt my lessons from mixing too much. If you just stay in your lane, everything will be fine. Never have a hangover, so.
I'm not sure that that's true.
Yeah, it is. Or it'll never be as bad.
That's definitely true.
You don't have to get Domino's the next day.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to McDonald's. You don't have to, you know, stay shriveled in a hole.
What's your hangover meal of choice?
A McDonald's sausage McMuffin, no egg.
Me too, no egg.
No egg. That egg.
No, there's something weird about the egg, especially on a hangover.
And it just makes it all soggy.
Yeah. And it feels like, I'm not about an egg that you feel like you have to, like, bite through.
But sometimes I don't make it to a McDonald's in time, or they're not delivering or something by the time I feel ready to eat. So otherwise my corner shop hangover situation of choice is like a bag of frozen chicken nuggets, just have it on a platter, and then lots of pickled onion monster munch and the spicy monster munch.
Nice. A beige banquet,
maybe a Calippo.
Ooh, interesting. I can see that on a hangover.
And beige and ice.
Gorgeous, but we can't all live on beige.
I mean, I only ate beige food until I was like 8. I was the fussiest eater when I grew up. I'm quite short, so who knows if that's related, but
still questioning it. How did you get into being a recipe developer doing what you do?
So I started working for Leon, the like healthy company, in social media straight out of uni. And I stayed there for like 5 years, sort of moved up and started doing marketing and branding, and they published like a cookbook every year. So I really got to see behind the scenes of what that was like. And they always worked with amazing recipe developers like Jane Baxter. And I worked with her really closely, and they never had a food stylist on set. It was always just the author. And then like I would help out, and they didn't have a prop stylist. So Jo, my wife, was also working there as the head of design at the time. And she ended up doing the prop styling for the books and sort of art directing them. I really like saw behind the curtain of what it could be to create cookbooks. Yeah. Well, I love cookbooks. And then I just got this thing in my head, and I was like, well, I love cookbooks. So I was like, I will leave Leon and I will go to a cookbook publisher. I'll work there because then I'll see all of the cookbooks from the inside.
Yeah.
I worked in publicity, and I just really did not enjoy that. It was kind of like cold calling, like cold emailing people being like, will you write about this book? But I had like, you know, 50 books that I was responsible for at one time. So just bludgeoning these editors and magazines and publications to try and get like the one slot that is dedicated to book, but for all of my books. I left and I started assisting food stylists in the interim while I was waiting to go to Leith, to the cookery school, and I absolutely loved it. And I felt like I wanted to do the Leith course to sort of fast track myself and my knowledge in food. I was always loving cooking. I had a food blog while I was at uni. I was always hosting dinner parties, always like obsessed with food, but I didn't feel like I had the confidence to be able to make a lamb rack well, or how to fix a meringue when it would deflate, or, you know, all of that sort of technical knowledge was really, really exciting to learn and set me up in a really good path. So once I'd finished that, I went back to assisting, and then eventually took on a few of my own jobs, and then cookbooks, styling and recipe developing kind of come hand in hand. You know, you meet publishers or editors from magazines on shoots, and they're always looking for recipe testers and recipe developers. And who better to do that than the people who are having to cook on set to make it beautiful for a photograph? So it's a really sort of interchangeable skill there. And I love doing both, because I don't really like doing one thing. Not really keen on sitting still. never be not busy.
Which has its pros and its cons, but that's fine. Yeah. We live and learn.
Actually never learn.
No, we live and we never learn.
It's like, but every time I've taken on too much, I'm like, I'll never do that again, it was too much. And then you like take on more than that was the last time, and you're like, oh, maybe never again. But I'm literally in the process of doing one of those never again.
But you have an incredible studio to show for it, so
no, that's not even what I'm talking about. Oh.
What are you talking about?
Writing opportunities that are at the exact same time, but I can't say no to either, so are just going to be crying for a few months.
I think that's relatable, because I think lots of people put themselves in that situation. But it's also the excitement of like doing the thing is what gets you through the like pain of doing them at the same time and being overwhelmed.
It's like, if I say no, no one's ever going to ask me again. Gotta say yes.
And you can always figure it out. You can always get help along the way.
I've got an amazing network of little helpers behind the scenes. So
it's so always so interesting to hear how like people evolve into what they end up doing, because I think there's often like actually so many signs that like
that it was gonna
early on that it was gonna be that, but like it always takes everyone a little bit of time to like then fall into it, and then it's like, ah,
know that these things exist. Like I think both totally. Of our jobs and careers, like if you were going to a career fair at school, no one's there being like, hey, you could be a recipe developer, or you could be like an event designer, or you know, you can be a Google skater.
It's not like, on their list, is it?
Like teacher, lawyer, doctor.
Yeah. And you're like, I don't want to do any of those.
I don't want to do any of those things.
And also I want to do all of these things, but not pick one.
Like a hairdressing chair. And they're like, what do you do? And I say, oh, I'm a food stylist. They're like, I've never heard that before. Yeah, like I can often, yeah, get that little.
Yeah, hard relate to the hairdresser chat.
Yeah.
So like it's always like the when you realise how you explain what you do.
Yeah, and they're like, so you take the photos? And I'm like, no. They're like, oh, you're a chef? And I'm like, no.
It's like however, like yearly, every 6 months reminder of like how to explain your job.
Yeah, and it might have updated and you're like, oh,
like I haven't refined this well enough yet.
Oh, no, I'm not got my elevator pitch down.
Yeah, exactly. Are you going to have any entertainment at your dinner party? No, you mentioned karaoke machine.
Probably got to do the karaoke machine. Yeah, not really. I mean, I do really like playing Articulate.
Me too. That is one of my favourite board games.
Nothing, like I could only play it in winter. And I don't think that my dream dinner party is in winter. I think it's a summery guy. I don't know why. I just got into association of board games with like fire, darkness.
I think board games are a bit of a like...
When it's sunny, we're all just happy to chat.
Yeah. Whereas we need some entertaining in winter. I feel like Articulate is all dependent on who your partner is, though.
And how drunk they are.
I feel like sometimes you get better at Articulate when you're drunker.
Depends if you're on the same drunk vibe.
It's true. It's very true.
The last time I played Articulate, it wasn't actually someone was on my team. It was two friends. They were so far gone that one of the things that he pulled up a card and he didn't pass. He didn't try and do any other things for the whole round. He just kept on saying rhombus. Rhombus. And the friend was like, shapes, like, can you help? Maths. Going on and on. And then it ended up being kite was the word. But he just couldn't think of anything.
His brain black.
Rhombus. And you're like, no one actually really knows what a rhombus shape is except for you, mate. You're in fire. Kids do this. It's in the wind. He couldn't think of anything.
But sometimes your brain doesn't just... You just have one.
He turned into a rhombus, yeah.
Yeah, it is really dependent on like the wavelength that you're on with the other person. Like we used to play the original Articulate a lot. I say the original one because there's different ones now. And like if you played it enough, yeah, there's like newer versions and stuff. Yeah, they're not as good because if you played the original one enough, you've got an insight into what some of the cards are. So if like I used to play with my sister and we were just so good at it because like certain cards or certain people would come up and you just say one word and they'd be like, yeah, know exactly who it is, got you. Yeah. I think the fun of that game though is the people that like are trying so hard and can't, like it's just not working. Yeah.
Really like you're on a similar wavelength to someone's partner and they're not, and so like, I'd be getting so many of them.
Amazing. I mean, I would like to see Nigella playing Articulate.
I think she'd get a bit flustered. She'd be too calm.
You'd be like, come on, step up, Nigella.
I think she wouldn't have the urgency that is necessary for a good game of Articulate.
Amazing. Okay, let's do some quick fire questions. Sweet or savory?
Savory.
Something you always have in the cupboard?
Olive oil.
Supermarket of choice?
I have many answers to this. My nearest is Sainsbury's, so it is my default. Supermarket of choice would be Ocado when it was Waitrose, but I also love going to Lidl. Just love those middle, not for food even necessarily, but the cheese and stuff is really good. But I just
like a day out.
And being like, ooh, what do I want? Like when the brands are taking out of it.
Yeah.
It's really fun to shop. It kind of feels like going to a foreign supermarket, which is the most fun thing to do in the world.
Where's your favorite country to go to a
literally any? I think France is really good because it's got like the sort of gourmet bouge to it. Like in Spain, you're like, yeah, I know this stuff and you guys don't really do any vegetables. But my main thing I like to do is try crisp flavors.
Favorite condiment?
Is primula a condiment?
Is what a condiment?
Primula. It's a squeezy tube of cheese.
I think you can have that.
Otherwise, it's Marmite.
I would like some reasoning behind the squeezy cheese, though.
It's just my favourite thing on the planet. I don't really know how to describe it. It's a like akin to Dairy Lee. Comes in a squeezy tube. It used to come in a tub, so maybe it's not condiment. But I put a little bit in sauces. I put, you know, if I'm making anything like remotely cheesy, but also I just have it on toast.
Top three herbs and spices.
I'm going to go all herbs because I reach for them a lot more than I reach for spices. Thyme is my number one. I think it's delicious in sweet and savory food. Adds such like a nice depth to everything. Number two is basil. And number three is coriander because it's really versatile across loads of cuisines.
Favorite crisp?
Pickled onion monster munch.
Nice. As referred to in Hangover Meal.
Yes. Number two is squares. I ask people this all the time.
Ooh, what they're squares.
Desert Island crisps. I think it could be a whole thing.
Yeah, it definitely could.
And I once met someone who said that her favorite crisp was she'd found an unsalted potato crisp. And that was her favorite because you could really taste the potato. And honestly, we've not really spoken since.
No, yeah, there's so much. There's so much more out there.
There's so much you can judge people for on their crisp choices. So, yeah.
That's why food questions are the best.
Yeah.
Takeaway of choice.
Sushi.
What's your go-to sushi?
So I can't make it, like, so.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I like all of the salmon-y ones. I like nigiri. I like a sort of prawn katsu roll. What are they called? Dragon roll. Or if they have like a soft shell crab one, I love those.
I love that when you know you've got like a night in on your own and you're like, I can order anything and I can watch whatever I want. Favorite cookbook?
Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat by Samin Nosrat. I think when I first read that, it just really made everything click into place. And it was such an easy to use formula to like bring into recipe development, thinking like, what's this missing? I just think it was brilliantly written. All of the technical stuff and the recipes in the back are incredible.
Okay, and last one. If you could only eat one country's cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I've thought about this quite a bunch before. I think it's Italy because there's so many different regions and cuisines and I don't think it would get boring and they have such an amazing focus on fresh produce that I think it'd be delicious. But I would be really tempted to also say something like Thailand because I think those are the flavours that I often really crave and like satisfy like a salt, acidic, sweet, sour edge that you just can't really actually get from a lot of Mediterranean food. But I'm still sticking with Italian.
Thai is mine, so.
Is it? Okay. Well, maybe we could share.
Yeah, maybe we could share and then just like sneakily pass things over.
Yes, and you can only have that.
Only like, save me a little bit of that pasta. I'll bring you some sauce. Curry. Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
No, it's been really nice.
So fun. So, so fun.
My fictional guest, she's been on my mind. I regret her. But...
Would you like to change?
No, because I can't think of anyone better.
If you think of someone after, message me. I'll put it in the show notes.
I need to go read a book and find a new character that I love.
It's really made you reevaluate.
Yeah. I'm reading too much nonfiction.
Oh, well, no, it was so fun. Do you want to let people know where they can find you if they don't follow you?
Sure. I am my name on all platforms. So you can find me at Saskia, I think, .Saidi on Instagram or Saskia Saidi on TikTok. I've got SaskiaSaidi.com, my website, or you can follow Saidi Studio, our new photography space in Peckham, if you like. That would be lovely.
Woo, exciting. All right, thank you so much.
Thanks, Callie. This was really fun.
So fun. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Tables to Talk About. If you enjoyed it, I'd absolutely love if you would subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps people find us and allows me to get the absolute best guests that I can for you. If we've inspired you to get hosting and you fancy yourself some playful tableware or you need help setting the scene for an upcoming event, you can follow us at Studio Dine on socials or check out our website, studiodine.com, for more. I'll see you next time.